Welcome to Brave New Bookshelf, a podcast that explores the fascinating intersection of AI and authorship. Join hosts Steph Pajonas and Danica Favorite as they dive into thought-provoking discussions, debunk myths, and highlight the transformative role of AI in the publishing industry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Brave New Bookshelf. I'm your co-host, Steph Pajonas. I am the CTO and COO of the Future Fiction Academy, where we teach authors how to use AI in any part of their business. We're having a fantastic time over at the Future Fiction Academy. We're teaching people how to use RaptorWrite, our new tool for writing, and people are hammering away at that.
Yeah.
They're doing so great. I'm really impressed with all of the words people are sending out there into the AI LLMs and getting back lots of good stuff. So yay, yay, yay.
I'm excited too.
I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, as always, Danica Favorite. How are you doing today, Danica?
Thank you. Yeah, so I'm Danica Favorite. I am the community manager at Publish Drive. And Publish Drive is here to help all authors on all stages of their author journey, whether that is distributing their books to the widest market possible, or helping do their royalty splits with other co-authors. And finally, of course, our exciting thing is using some AI tools to help optimize their publishing process, like their metadata, things like that. And one of the things I've sort of been hinting out at episodes, but it is finally completely live, is you can use all of Publish Drive's products at an entry level for free. Obviously, then there's paid plans for everything, but try out all the different tools because you get to do it for free now, which is super exciting for me. Again, call it, you know, same thing with FFA. We want you to be able to try things and not have a huge cost to just go out there and experiment, because we believe that publishing is for everyone. And as many barriers to entry as we can get rid of, we're here for that. So today, I'm super excited to have our good friend, Jill Cooper. Steph and Jill and I have been friends for a long time. I do also a lot of work with Jill. She is one of the wives at The Writing Wives. I'm the favorite wife, by the way. But with The Writing Wives, they have all kinds of great tools to help authors. They also, like us, have a lot of paid programs, but they've also done some really cool free challenges and things like that. We're all here to help authors, and I love talking to Jill because not only is Jill an author, but she's an authorpreneur, and she's got all these great entrepreneurial ideas, all these author businessy things that she does to help authors. Today, we're going to talk to Jill about doing all the cool author stuff, and I'm going to let Jill introduce herself, and we get to hear a little more from Jill Cooper today.
Hello. It's so awesome to be here with you too, since I have known both of you for, I feel like, forever. I'm Jill Cooper. I write young adult, sci-fi, sweet romance, fantasy. I have a lot of stuff going on and a lot of different pen names. I'm also married to Mel Cooper, as a lot of people know, and we run The Writing Wives together with Cheech's Authors, mostly things about branding, ads, how to have that one-click presence on Amazon. And we are pivoting a little bit to low cost, to as low as we can get it, to help teach the fundamentals of how you be a successful author, how you can sustain it and not burn yourself out, not having to constantly be jumping from new release to new release. And, you know, a lot of that comes from personal experiences, not wanting to slave away week after week, writing 4 books a month and stuff like that.
I love what you said, that idea of making your author business sustainable. Yeah. That's one of the things we haven't really talked about in this group. And so I'm excited that you're here talking about it today. And that's what The Writing Wives does for authors, because I think with all these great AI tools and everything that we talk about in the author community, sustainability is really, really key. So what are some things that The Writing Wives does to help authors be sustainable?
Well, first we're trying to teach that, like, the backlist is king, that as soon as you write a book, and after that, you have that, like, new release period, it's now in your backlist, right? So you basically want to build up your backlist. Yes, some people are like, well, I want to build my backlist up as quickly as possible. But you also want to do it sustainably so that you're building your backlist, but that your life doesn't suffer. Like, what if your kids need you? What if your car suddenly breaks and suddenly your deadline, your pre-orders, one falls, then they all fall? Like, that's very stressful. So I want to teach how to basically look at your your life, how many books can you actually write a year? Not how many books can you write a year if everything went perfect, because that's not going to happen, right? And then also using genre and trope on your Amazon product page, on your covers, in like the keywords in your blurb for your genre, all things that make it easier to sell a book, either in on a Facebook ad or when people are just like browsing through Amazon, that someone will see it and just be like, that book was written for me. Mm-hmm. And that's how we do those cues, through like visual cues from the covers, and then words, different types of words in the titles and the blurbs and the descriptions that will hopefully do most of the work for you, which is basically what we're talking about. We want the work to be as easy as possible, especially in our current climate and society where everyone's looking for something easy. So everyone's looking for some escapism with fiction. And that's basically how we're framing everything now.
Right. You're trying to get it to be almost as hands off as you can, right? You set it up for success and you send mm-hmm. it out there and yes. you're hoping that you've done enough so that it can sustain itself, and like little tweaks here and there, right?
Right. Yeah. Mel does a class, and then it is sort of like that. Well, now what? Like, we've given all this information, but now it's on the author's shoulders basically to like how to take that information and use it in their career. So we've started putting checklists and guides and workbooks behind everything that we have, whether it's a Facebook ad class or, you know, we're doing how to build super fans like Marvel and Star Wars. Like, how do you do that at a smaller scale inside your business? Mm-hmm. So when people come into that, they'll get the workbook before the class starts, and they'll have spots to fill in these things and to brainstorm and figure out like, well, how can I make that work for me? I don't want to do X, Y, Z, but I could do this. And it's all about being flexible and increasing your IP and finding multiple revenue streams for things you've already written or produced. Because I think that is like one of the most important things. And obviously everyone will think, oh, audiobooks. Yes, that's great. But what can we do beyond audiobooks, you know? Mm-hmm. And I have business friends that are now writing books, and watching how they tackle it as coming from the business world is just a different mindset than how someone I just want to write a book and I just want to make money off of it. It's fascinating just to watch how they do it a little bit differently.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm actually like, okay, is this going to be the next Writing Wife class?
No, so, I don't want to make it to next. Yeah, you never know.
It is. But I do think it's a good point that when you look at your writing as a business person, as opposed to, oh, I'm a creative. You can still be a creative, but putting that business mindset is so important, because I tell people this all the time. The second I decide I'm going to write a book and put it up for sale, it's no longer just my baby. It's a commercial product, because that's what happens when you put a book up for sale. If I wanted to write a book that I was never going to sell, okay, cool. I could do whatever I want. But once I want to sell it, then I have to make some decisions that sometimes are in the interest of making that sale as opposed to just being the creative. And it's easier to do that when you have a business mindset.
A lot of creatives, like when you start calling a book a product, they get that knee jerk. It's not a product. It's my book. It's my baby. But for people from the business world, like, you're all creating products, and that's what you sell. You sell a product. So there is that separation of, I'm a creator, I love my books, but now I'm a marketer, and now I have to think about like, how am I going to market my product? It doesn't mean that your creativity or artistic skill is any less. It almost makes it better, but you do need to think of it as a product, of a way of that's representing of you and your business and everything you stand for. And I think once you start thinking of your books as content, as your world as content, it makes it so much easier to sell it.
That shift is so hard for authors, especially somebody who's very new to this and has just been immersed themselves into their book and their world for a long time. And then they finish and they come up for air and they're like, oh, what's next? Oh, I have to market the book. I have to sell the book, right? Now it becomes a product. And that shift, that mind shift, is really tough for a lot of people. And then there's a lot of floundering that happens. Like, I'll try this and I'll try that. And this is where I love the fact that you guys are focused on the checklists, on the optimization of your blurbs and your keywords and your covers and all of that kind of stuff. Because if you can just get that right, then you're set on the right path. And I don't think enough authors hear that when they're first starting out and with their first book and whatnot. So hopefully we can start getting to people earlier in their careers instead of later, when they floundered all over the place for like 5 years and they're ready to give up. Because I see that a lot too, unfortunately.
I do see that a lot too. And everybody knows that it's familiar with us that we're basically known for Facebook ads and Facebook ad consulting. And the problem why we did the pivot is because I felt like I was running into a wall, was that all authors want to run Facebook ads, no matter where they are in their career, even if they're brand new. And these people are not ready for Facebook ads. And you try to talk about their blurbs, their covers, their Amazon product page and stuff like that. And they're like, well, I just want to run ads. And we need to step back. Sometimes we need to fix certain things that, because if you're paying good money to run a Facebook ad, don't spend money on a Facebook ad unless you believe in your product and it's 100% ready for a cold audience. And a lot of things we'll hear, so like, my fans love my book and they love my cover. It's like, yeah, but how many fans do you have? If you want mass appeal across, like, mainstream appeal, then there are certain things we need to do. There are certain audience expectations that must be met. Your cover is not for you, it's for your audience. And if they're expecting XYZ and you have ABC, then they're not going to think that your book is for them, even if it actually is perfect. So there's lots of things like that we really want to teach. And you do hit the wall. Well, I already have that. Well, it's like, well, we really need to dive into it. And like, say your reader magnet, is it the best possible representation of your series you're trying to push? Or is it just something that you just happen to have and you haven't actually put the time to craft your, what I call the best marketing tool you have is your reader magnet. And so I think it should have everything behind it, including a professional or quality cover and edit, because it's so clutch. And I feel like we've been talking about reader magnets now for like 8 years and we're still like we're still talking about it.
It's hard for people to be like, oh, I finished this book one in my series. It's awesome. And then people are just like, well, you should write a reader magnet now. And they're like, what?
Yeah. And now really? I'm like, well, before you write that cool series that you just told me that idea, right? Go write the reader magnet first. Let's write that.
Well, that's tough for people. That is a whole mindset shift, man.
For sure. Like, I write the book blurbs first, too. I write those before I write the book. Mm-hmm. It's so much easier to write it before your head gets all tangled with all the plot ideas and all the POVs and, like, my big world. I have to put it all in the blurb. And it's so much easier to do it first. Get out of the way.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I tell authors this all the time. We're so close to our stories that sometimes we don't know what those most important things are. And we think, oh, this is a book about X. And really, it's not. It's about this. And so to be able to have that focus of what is the story really about, and a little product pitch here with PublishDrive's metadata tool, like, you put your book in and the AI analyzes and comes back and says, this is what the book is about. Now, you might be like, no, that's not what my book's about. Okay, well, that means you didn't have that clearly written in the book. So then you have to decide, okay, is there something in my story I have to change because I made the book about this beautiful journey, or is the book really about these tropes and these are sellable tropes? So I'm going to remarket my book with that. But going to like what you and Mal teach too, I had a great series of covers done and I was so excited about them. And I remember Mal said, no, I don't think those are that great. I'm like, I paid a lot of money for these covers. And Mal was like, yeah, but this is what the cover tells me. And this is not what your book's about. And I was like, oh, crap, you're right. And I followed Mal's advice. I went through, I looked at the best-selling books in my genre. I went and looked at best-selling books with similar covers. And she was right. The kind of cover I had was not for the genre I had written. It stinks to have to put all that money, all that work into something, but then to realize, okay, but if this isn't what's going to sell in this genre, I would rather, again, do you want to sell books or do you just want to have your story out? That's a valid question. I want to sell books. So it's often best, and this is what I love about what you two teach, is start from the very beginning of getting that genre, that trope, those concepts all ready from day one. So that way, you know, you're going to be on target with the market when that book goes to market.
Yeah, and all those things are fundamental. If you nail genre and trope, that helps you write Facebook ad copy. It helps you write the blurb. It helps you write your landing page. And as you're talking about covers, I would say to authors, don't fall so in love with your cover or spend so much money on your cover that in 2 to 3 years, you aren't going to do it again. Because markets change. We looked at covers like in one of the genre and globe classes with Mal's covers for her sci-fi series. And she's like, oh yeah, my covers are now pointing to tropes that aren't in the book. They're all pointing to alien, and there are no aliens in my books at all. Even when you reach that level of constant sales, you still have to look at your covers and see, like, do I need to redo these covers mm-hmm. to new market expectations? If you think about it, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, everyone knows these books exist, but they still change their covers every couple of years. And there's a reason why they do it, which A, you want to sell more books. To people that already own your books because they want the new cover, and then also to pull in like new readers because there's new readers growing up and being born all the time, and we want to target those to them as they get interested in different genres and different series.
Yeah, I think that's really important, and I even just was on a podcast yesterday where I was telling them some of the stuff that I want to do with the series that I have out right now. And I was like, but before I do any of that, I need new covers because I made these covers 5 years ago. They're not to genre anymore. And that is sacrifice you have to make sometimes. If you want to sell more books, change. And if you're okay with where things are, that's okay. But be honest about that and be honest about what your goals are. And it's okay to have different goals. So one of the things that we've talked about in changing this that I know, like for me, like I was saying about this cover series, I spent a ton of money on, and that has to be redone. And so I'm excited, of course, because I can use some AI and some things like that to get those covers, to make those improvements to the covers where I think in previous years, I would have just been like, forget it. I don't have the option. Now I can have a little more options with that. With AI tools. And so I'm wondering how you're looking at that. How are you approaching AI in publishing?
A little differently. I like depends where I am. I do love AI art. I'm not good at prompting it, so I pay other people to prompt it for me. Like same. Cover artists that are so like they're so amazing with their AI art. We're changing how the lighting hits and it looks so realistic or fantastic if I'm looking at a fantasy thing. So I pay people to help me generate the kind of images I'm going for. I do use AI to write when I'm writing fiction. It's starting to happen more frequently that I'm writing at all. I spent, like, I'm going to say 5 years completely burnt out. I got COVID and then writing a simple sentence like a dog walked across the street was so hard. Like, I could not do it. And it was just frustrating. And I hated it every second of it. So I just stopped. I'm like, I don't like it. Not going to do it anymore. But then there was always this thing where you get a story idea and you're like, well, I sure wish I could write. And I would have some episodes where I would cry. I was like, I just can't do it. I want to do it, but it's just not happening. And then when I started using a little bit of Claude Novel Crafter, it's like, oh my God, like the joy is there. I train it on my previous books, like my voice for young adult, let's say. And I can't tell the difference. I sent it to Mal, and Mal was like, if you didn't tell me this was AI, I would have thought this was you, because I cannot tell. When I know, like, that's just going to keep getting better, right? Because we're still at the infancy stage of AI and what it can do. And it's just exciting. I have this crazy idea, and normally I'd be like, well, it's going to take 3 months for me to write that crazy idea. So I, like, can't even, like, know. But now it's like, I'm just going to try to see where it could go, and then just have fun plotting out the different scenes or the different beats. And I know it's not instantaneous. It does take work, but it's fun and it feels collaborative. And I'm just really, really just enjoying it. And then there's the business side where I use a bunch of different tools to help me create workbooks off of Mal's videos and scripts. Like I already have the scripts. So I just use mostly ChatGPT plus something called beautiful.ai, which will make slides for you. It makes like a set of slides, and it is not enough, and they are not that great. But the different layouts are awesome, so I can just pick and choose what I want and then just modify it. So rather than just starting from a blank document or page, I have a skeletal structure, and then I can just go in there and build it out to how I want it to look, because I have those ideas. I have trouble when it's just blank. Help me.
Me too. I'm right there with you. I'm going to have to get the link to that because slideshows are like my Achilles heel. I'm always just like, I don't know where to start. So if something gives me a skeleton, that sounds like a great idea.
It was great. We were building out this class, how to build super fans. And I was very specific. I knew exactly what I wanted. So I'm telling, like I was building it at ChatGPT saying, this is my audience. These are the things I want to hit. So it's building me basically like an outline so I can go in and write a script for Mal's class. So then I took the script and I said, well, what slides would you recommend for these? And then it changed the document to these are the slides and this is what it should go with. And then I was like, great, now we have the slides. Okay, now let's take these slides. What would we make a workbook for the people that are watching this presentation so they can make notes and follow up? And that's basically how I did it. That probably would have taken me a week. 5 to 7 days of hard work. And I was able to do it all in like a couple hours a day. And it was just fun too. I didn't feel overwhelmed or frustrated, which I still get that way a lot since my bad COVID like 2 years ago where I shut down sometimes.
I hear you. You know, my story also coming to AI from COVID brain fog, and I still have lapses where like I have a really bad week where I just can't even think, can't form sentences. It's really hard doing a podcast sometimes when I can't form sentences, coherent sentences, but I make it work. Anyway, so I definitely feel you. The AI is there to help us and to level us up, which is what I say a lot. But I also really love it for all of these business things because at the Future Fiction Academy, we do a lot of Zoom classes with our students, right? And I take the transcripts when I'm done doing the editing and Descript. I take the transcripts and I have a bunch of prompts that I run them through on GPT, usually 4.0. And I'm like, give me a blog post about this. Help me come up with keywords, like whatever I need to do. I have that source material from the transcript and it can give me whatever I want. I love that you're making workbooks. You're doing all this fun stuff. It's all stuff that students want, but it is very hard to produce and come up with if you don't have some starting point like you do. So I like that.
Yeah, we do use also Fathom for Zoom calls because I found them like it's very handy if we're having strategy calls with authors. We're having like this kickoff for all our memberships. When people come in, I can just run the Fathom notes. I'm in there with Mal and the client. I'm highlighting like, okay, this is a highlight, and they'll just create like these little snippets. And then I create basically a to-do list based on everything everyone is saying, and then able to send this them almost as like this full package of here's your recording, here are the highlights, here's the stuff that Mal says you need to do in the next 30 days, and just keep building that way. I've also used it to help me create social media strategies, and I made like a generic one for a person that is never used social media before for business at all. Like they have no idea, right? So I create a basic strategy and then I'm able to say, okay, what topics would a paranormal cozy author that's writing witch romance, what kind of topics would they talk about? I'm able to basically, I'm breaking it down by genre. Now I have so many social media strategy documents on my computer and I'm just uploading them into the membership, into our school community. Because a lot of times I do hear, well, I'm on social media, but I have no idea what to post. I don't know what to do. Do I just share memes? Like what, like cat videos? What do I do? Right. And obviously that stuff is great, but it's not going to get you fans of your genre to notice you. So I'm just building everything out like a document at a time. And Mal, I sent her the social media strategy. She's like, this is amazing. How long did this take you? Like, oh, so long. No, oh, I told her right away.
So long.
Maybe you just add some pictures to this document and then it would like be really snazzy. So I did that too. I was like, fine, I'll make it snazzy.
But I love that. I love that your approach, and this is why I was really excited to have you on here. It's like, okay, is there something that AI can help me with? Or where am I struggling? Okay, cool. Let me try AI for this. And it's cool because I see you using AI in so many little ways that make this huge difference. And I think that is where every author can take a little piece and say, okay, I'm willing to do this. I'm not willing to do that. We just had someone in the AI authors group say, I am not willing to use AI for this part of my process. And we're like, that's cool. Other people do and they find it successful. But hey, like, here's where you are using it and where you're successful. And so it isn't about everyone saying, okay, do all AI for all things. If there's pieces you love, do it. Jill, for you, you've got all these great ideas. So you don't need AI necessarily to say, tell me how to do this super fan thing, because you already had your super fans pretty well set in your head. You just went to AI and said, hey, this is my idea. Help me bring it to life. And I think that's really cool.
And I feel like the more I use AI in these like little ways, the more I find, I think, oh, I could use AI to help me with that. Like someone wants a calendar of social media posts, you know, for like, say, 6 months. So I said, okay, let's
like,
go build
that.
Like,
let's do that.
Like we already have the list of what you should be posting. Let's put a schedule. How often do you want to post? And she's like, twice a week. So I'm like, okay, we want to post twice a week. These are the topics. Can you just make a calendar? And then I said, don't assign a month to it because I have no idea when they're going to start doing it, and leave it generic. And then we just did that. So I find the more I use it, the more I can find these little ways to do it. And just because the AI spits it out at me doesn't mean that, okay, that's the final thing. I'm going to read through it. I'm going to tweak it or change it. I had AI write my author note in my new story. And I said, this is what I want to say in my note. And then I read it and I changed stuff at the end. And I put my signature moves on it. And then, so I do feel like all of the AI stuff is me. I feel like I'm just asking, like, how can AI serve me, our clients, our customers, our readers, to make things better and easier? We all want to make things easy in our lives all the time. That's why when you go to the store, there's a box of cake mix, you know, like, because we could make everything from scratch. Of course we could, but sometimes you just want to make a quick batch of brownies and you don't want to have to do everything yourself. And for me, I feel like AI, it's like the same thing. I'm just looking to make life easy for me. And we're always doing that. So why is it different with this? Because I don't think it really is.
Yeah, I agree. I think that needs to be the new slogan. How can AI serve me? That's so perfect. I think that's really wonderful. Yeah, there you go. For those of you listening, Jill just did this really cute little model move. AI serving her was perfect. Our second question, which you've talked a little bit about already, like it's been nice because it's all flowed together, is what does your AI workflow look like? And you've talked a little bit about that already. So I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add or share more that might be helpful to people listening.
I feel like for business stuff, I use ChatGPT a lot and I will just basically stay there. Like, and I've gotten to the point where I'll say, oh, well, okay, once you're done, make it a doc, make it a PDF. Make sure you add the line so people can write their answers on it. So it does all that for me. If I'm doing fiction, I used to use like ChatGPT Claude, but now that I've got comfortable with Novel Crafter, which took a bit, I actually hired someone to set Novel Crafter up for me because I just logged in there and I was like, no, this is too hard. No, I'm going to hire someone and they're going to have them set my book up. And then once I see it, I'll be like, oh, okay. So that's basically what happened. I was like, oh, okay. Well, that wasn't that hard. And it didn't cost me a lot of money. So I was just happy to have it. So now I do everything fiction and Novel Crafter. I don't do my own images. I get people to send them to me and then maybe I'll do something in Canva with it, like to expand it or add text, but I'm not really good with text either. So I usually will have to ask Mal, like, can you do some typography for me? And then about 6 weeks later, I'll get it.
Yeah.
I do have Revoicer.ai. I'm going to turn my new story into an audiobook to stick on YouTube. It's not really part of my workflow yet. That's something I will do after a project is over. I used to get every subscription I could to test out new things, but now I feel pretty good where I currently am. But we'll see what happens. I'm sure I will add something eventually.
Yeah, that is definitely a challenge. You see all the tools, you want to learn all the tools. So all these subscriptions, it was funny, I did just let my Midjourney subscription go and then I was kicking myself for it because everyone's like, oh, but now you can do this in Midjourney. I'm like, no, I'm not, because I am also not very good at the image generation. So it's important though to really think about that. You hear about all the pretty shiny tools and really finding what works for you. I love that you found someone to set up Novel Crafter for you because I did give up on Novel Crafter. I still pay for the stupid thing. I really need to like not. But like,
if you want a reference, let me know. I can send her over.
Yeah, like, but I just sit there. I'm like, I cannot figure this thing out. It's too much work. But that is what you have to do, is figure out where is my time best spent? And is it me doing it? Is it me hiring someone to do it for me? Even with the images and the covers, I was saying, like, for me, the answer probably will be AI covers, but I can get those with someone helping design them at a fraction of the cost. I've seen a couple people talk about how they're making AI covers that don't seem too terribly expensive. And I'm like, okay, I can afford that. I can't afford to redo the thousands of dollars I spent on some of these other covers. So it's that balancing act.
I'd say we can have AI, like AI elements on our covers for over a year. And I don't think anyone has noticed because it's just an element, right? Like, especially for sci-fi, so much easier. We'd spend hours looking for a stock background that we could use for a sci-fi cover. Well, now we could just make custom stock images. We don't care if other people are using the same ones. Ugh, it doesn't make a difference. It makes it easier. It makes it more personal. Our sci-fi artist for our covers, it's totally, like, he's been using AI now for us and for himself and other clients. Like, just so much easier. Just get a bridge. Oh, boom, done. Okay.
Yeah. When we had Mal made the same point where just with sci-fi covers, it's been so much easier with AI to get the images that you guys want. It doesn't have to be either or. You don't have to say just AI or no AI. It can be that blend. I think that's where the trend is going to go more towards. It's not going to be just, oh, everything's solely AI. It's going to be, okay, there's a blend. And in many cases, you won't be able to tell.
Back in the day, we paid for custom photo shoots to get models no one had seen before, to get armor that looked like Mal's character's armor. And that is expensive. Let me tell you, this is much easier. And those artists are still getting the money because they're putting the covers together for us. And it's just been a great working relationship.
We've talked a lot about your process and things. I love that you're using AI for so many different things in so many different ways.
It'll probably change next week too. Like, I'll just add something new.
Yeah. But I love that. And that's what I love talking to you, because like, we're friends, so we do talk a lot, and it is always cool to hear, wait, Jill's doing that? Wait, what? And so I love that there's always something new that you're trying, that you're doing. It's always encouraging me to be like, oh, ooh, I haven't heard of that. Ooh, I'm going to try that. And like I said, the temptation is you don't want to try everything because that's all you do, but
Not all at once, right?
Right. But it is fun. It's so much fun. And it does bring the joy back. Steph and I had an episode earlier this season where we were talking about how, for us, AI has brought so much of the joy back in our writing. And I love that it did the same for you in terms of, like, yay, I have this joy again. And it's not so stressful.
Yeah. Even if I decided not to publish them or not to publish right now, like, I'm just having fun and they can stay on my computer forever. Like, it, or for whenever I decide it's time to publish, I don't necessarily need to race to publish. I can just have a good time writing.
Right. Exactly. I've heard in some of our conversations where you'll have this, oh yeah, and I was working on this little thing. I'm like, okay, hurry up, finish it. I want it. And now we can get that from you.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I can finally release my grizzled bunny mech warrior. Sci-fi series.
Bunny Mech Warrior. Okay. Excellent. Yes. I bet you, did that come from an inspiration from Monty Python, perhaps?
It didn't. It actually came inspiration from a video game I saw at PAX East last year. Oh. Where it's just this grizzled bunny with a carrot, you know, like he's going off to fight aliens on some video game. And I just thought he was so cute. But they always do cats in space. What if I did a bunny?
Yeah, and I'm always pressuring her for more cats in space. So,
I know. And then we get invited to be in the pet space anthology, and I feel like I should be. I love writing.
Totally cats. Be in Pets in Space. I'll put a little bug in Carol's ear for you there.
Yeah, invite me out. I would love to write a cat story specifically for the anthology. Yes.
I'm telling you, the cats in space, that's where it's at. But see, this is what I love, is that the three of us can sit here and laugh and joke about all of our story ideas, when I can low-key, high-key pressure Jill about stories I want from her. And we can laugh about it, as opposed to like feeling the stress of, oh my God, I have to write this thing. And now we can just laugh and be like, yeah, this is, because it's fun.
I used to feel that stress like every day. If I don't write 5,000 words and I have a kid in preschool and I have to go pick them up and then I get to spend time with them and I have to make dinner. And like, I only wrote 3,000 words and what am I going to do? And I'm such a failure, and just let go of all of that.
Yes.
Yeah, just let it go. We don't need that stress anymore.
No. And I learned that when I had congestive heart failure, I was in the hospital for 8 days. You got to fix this. You get off the stress train and putting so much pressure on yourself. You had to revamp all our lives just to deal with that and recover from that and not face a like, well, am I going to be dead in 10 years sort of future? I didn't want that.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
None of us want that.
And that's how we think about how do we make a sustainable writing career and what can we do that's sustainable? And a lot of the stuff you described in your business and your business processes and the things that you're doing, which are great service to authors, that isn't sustainable without AI. Like you couldn't do all those workbooks and all of the cool things that you're doing with your different courses if you didn't have that assistant doing what you want.
Now I need to hire more people to make workbooks full time or something.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily sustainable either. So
no,
this is where these tools come in handy because they're there to help lighten the load a little bit. You can still farm out plenty to other people like you do with your covers and the images and all that kind of stuff. It's just that we're able to give a little bit of extra value to some of our clients, our students, whatever it may be, just by using these tools to help take the information that we already have and present it in different ways.
Yeah, because it's always, it's up here. It's just getting it out sometimes is hard.
Yeah.
Or not a priority, depending what the day looks like with everything else we have going on. So I can do that and not at the end of it, not feel mentally exhausted. I can still go on and do other things and be around for my family or whatever it is that we're currently doing. I can write and not feel mentally just done for the day when it's over. I can switch gears faster between fiction and business and any other full-time crochet business manager and like all these things that I have to balance that we're always doing. It just makes it a lot more sustainable and fun. And so I just always want to do more.
Yeah. I know now I get to tease you more because you have all these different business ideas and all these businesses and your daughter who has all of her businesses, her crochet stuff and all the different things. And I think pre-AI, that to me is just absolutely exhausting. And here you are just energized by all of it. And it's exciting because the ideas in your head don't have to stay in your head. And in my opinion, part of the stress happens when you have all these things in your head and all the stuff you want to do, and you don't have the bandwidth to do it. Mm-hmm. And with AI, you finally have that bandwidth, which I think is amazing. And it just makes me excited for all the things I know you have in the pipeline and all the things that you get to do.
It's very exciting. And I do also think about like, well, is this project worth my time? Because 47, how many more projects can I really do? Is this worth actually investing a lot of time and energy into? And that's a question I didn't ask before I was hospitalized with heart failure. I just thought I had all the time in the world. So I feel like that really has framed how I think about things or how I tackle different responsibilities, whether I want to take it on or not. And yeah, the AI just helps make some tasks easier and faster to accomplish. And to me, AI is tech and it's not different than any other tech that I use. Whether I don't write out by hand, I don't use a typewriter anymore. I use the computer. And I know some people like to write by hand. I'm not one of those people. I love to buy notebooks.
I am.
Just
I have so many notebooks that are just sitting there blank because I really do not like writing and I don't like my handwriting. And I'm just like, why do I keep buying these? Because they're pretty.
Right. My daughter has shelves of journals. I don't think she ever racks them open because she's like, well, they're beautiful. Why would I write in them?
Yeah, I have shelves. You can't see it in this view, but I do have shelves of journals and they are all written in. But what's cool for me now is with AI, I've been exploring this a little bit. I haven't fully done it. Is since I dictate my books when I'm writing, one of the things, many projects on my list is I'm going to actually take these journals now because I can actually take a picture of the page and AI will translate that into text for me.
Oh, cool.
I have terrible handwriting and it can still be read by AI. It's amazing. My kids cannot read my handwriting, but AI can.
That's awesome. I have seen like some of that new tech, you know, coming up and it's like, man, what else are they going to think of?
Exactly. So I really think there's just something for everybody. So With all these tools, yeah, we'll talk about the last question. And I know when we were chatting beforehand, you're like, I don't know if I can pick. So you don't have to pick, but can you tell us about your favorite AI tool? And if you've got like a favorite one for this or a favorite for that, you can say that. But yeah, we'd love to hear about your favorite tool.
I guess I'm just really loving Novel Crafter right now because it's the newest, I admit. Everything else I've been using for like ChatGPT, like, oh, that's so 2023 or whatever. But I like Novel Crafter. I like that all like my codexes are there, that I have a search and I can type in a keyword and it will show me the character. It automatically generate a summary for every chapter as I finish. And I can toggle between different AI, whether I want to use something that's better for something steamy, let's say, or I'm just using like straight Claude, which is what I use 90% of the time. And I just like the way it like structures and everything is together. And I can do a chat off a scene or do a chat off a codex and it knows what I'm talking about. So that is currently my favorite. But again, that could change.
Yeah.
Could change.
I love that. I think that's valid because again, there's new stuff all the time and we're always learning and finding different tools and things like that. So I think it's valid to say that could change because it will.
Right. It will. And that's, I feel like my most advice for publishing is it's going to change. It's going to change next week. Just as you figure out Facebook ads, it's going to change. You have to be ready to change and go with the flow. Also, the finance aspect of the business is also like that, where you have the highs and you have the lows. And the key is to find sustainability where you can try to have almost like a field with small pitches as with the releases, but you don't want to sink to the bottom all the time. We want to help authors find that sustainability and longevity because we all see the authors that made it big and then 2 months later, a year later, like you can't find them anymore. Where did they go? Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess a lot of them burned out. A lot of them just like, well, I made the money once and I wasn't sure how to do it again. Or they just got tired and they're just like, I just had to stop because it was just exhausting. So I want more authors to find ways to do it in a sustainable way for them, which isn't necessarily what's going to work for me or for someone else, but everyone has to find their own key to figure out and stay in it and keep joy alive. Because for me, if there's no joy, then there's no reason to do it.
I agree with that 100%. We just did a podcast about finding the joy. And we think that's really important. Like if you're not having a joyful experience doing this job, then I don't know why you're doing this job in the first place.
Yeah,
you should probably do something else. Which is why I reject this whole notion that you have to like, you have to open a vein and bleed out for your craft. For your art, you need to suffer. And I reject that wholeheartedly. Crafting and doing your art should be a joy. It should absolutely be a joy.
I feel like that "you'll suffer for your art" thing is almost as old as art itself. And it's hard to shake. Like art should be painful and you should be broke. And like, I reject all of that.
Mm-hmm. I do. Yeah. I reject it as well because it's all from a completely different time period where back in the day, art wasn't accessible to the masses. All these books behind me, that would be a sign that I was an extremely wealthy woman. And now anyone can have a whole bunch of books. It's so much more accessible to people that idea of suffering. No, you don't have to suffer because anyone can have art. Anyone can create art, and so do it all and be joyful and have that art out there for anyone to enjoy. And authors should be able to make a living wage doing it. That is all part of rejecting all of those past beliefs that we've had of art that, no, I don't have to be this starving artist living in an attic that's barely heated. And no, I don't have to do that anymore. Thank God. I don't like the cold.
Me either. All right, this seems like a good place to wrap up our conversation. I know that Jill has to get off to another live that's going on. So I almost forgot. Right, so tell us how everybody who's listening can find you and the Writing Wives, your writing, and your business stuff as well.
You can find us at thewritingwives.com. Also on Facebook, if you type in The Writing Wives group, I think will probably come up. Most of my books are not available. But you can find me on Amazon under Jill Cooper. And Chris J. Pike is the name I write my sci-fi under. The other stuff, I don't know. You'll just have to guess.
Well, good. I love a good guessing game, so that's fine right, with me.
Yes. Send me screenshots. Is this you? Is this you?
I will find you eventually.
Yeah. And I'll eventually hop to a couple of them.
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. Well, thank you so much for coming, Jill. It was awesome talking to you. We're so pleased. I love talking about all these topics, so it's great to talk about them with a friend. Right, Danica? It's just so much fun to do this.
Yeah, it was so much fun. I love hanging out with you girls, you ladies. It was great. For making it easy.
Excellent. All right, Gori. So everybody, come by the Brave New Bookshelf website. So it's bravenewbookshelf.com. Read the blog post about this particular episode, find the links of the things that we were talking about here, and go off and be creative as well. All right. So everybody, we'll see you on the next episode. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on the Brave New Bookshelf. Be sure to like and subscribe to us on YouTube and your favorite podcast app. You can also visit us at bravenewbookshelf.com, sign up for our newsletter, and get all the show notes.